Thank you, and great to be here to share with you some of the research we've been doing. Just as a disclosure, required disclosures, and also an acknowledgement of our funders for our research, in particular this one, our CDC grant. By way of some background, drug poisonings or overdose is the leading cause of adult injury death in Rhode Island, Connecticut, and in 28 other states. Indeed, more fatal overdoses involve prescription opioids than other illicit drugs, heroin, cocaine combined. Two-thirds of Rhode Island and Connecticut's overdoses involve prescription opioids. And we do see that in the doctor shopping, this help-seeking potentially might be an indication of addiction, help-seeking behaviors that cause people to look for more medications to meet their addiction needs. This might create an overdose risk, as has been documented in a couple studies. Prescription monitoring programs, or PMPs, are one tool that can influence risks that are associated with abusable medications, and they're a mechanism that exists in 40 states and counting. Pharmacists, though, are on the front lines of prescription opioid abuse and the epidemic of overdose, and in particular, have access to prescription monitoring program data. A lot of times we see that pharmacists are motivated to use PMPs to detect diversion first and foremost to help reduce doctor shopping. But yet limited data really exist on the effects of PMP use on pharmacy practice. So we set forth as part of our CDC-funded study looking at prescription opioid overdose and the role of PMPs in the Rhode Island and Connecticut overdose problem, to undertake a survey to test for differences in prescription monitoring program use between two states, Connecticut and Rhode Island, with very different PMP accessibility. We also wanted to explore the use of PMPs in pharmacy practice, and then to examine associations between PMP use and pharmacist responses to suspected cases of diversion or doctor shopping. Just by way of some background in the two systems, they are quite different. So controlled substances data from all licensed pharmacies are electronically uploaded and securely stored, typically in a centralized database in both states. However, Connecticut's system is very different from Rhode Island's in that where it sits. It sits within the Department of Consumer Protection within the Drug Control Division. It's been operational as an online queryable tool since July of 2008. Registered health professionals can access these programs, and the controlled substances, the scheduled substances that are included, range from Schedule 2 to 5 prescriptions. The patient report, when queried, generates in a matter of seconds. And certainly the number of health professional queries to the system outnumber those of law enforcement, which tends to be a more traditional both funding source for a lot of the prescription monitoring programs, but also the recipients of the data. In Rhode Island, the opposite is really the case in terms of the fewer scheduled medications, Schedule 2 and 3 medications, are typically those that by law are covered within the PMP data set. It cannot be directly accessed or queried by health professionals. You have to submit by phone or email or fax a request to look at a patient's level data. This could take a matter of hours if you catch them on a good day, or weeks. And typically law enforcement then with an open investigation tends to be the main recipient and queries from them outnumber health professionals. This is what the patient report looks like. This is from the Connecticut system. The request page indicates whether a report is available for a patient that they might be querying. And they would be included in an attachment. I'll show you in the next slide what that looks like. And then you can see the little yellow triangle there indicates that an alert has been posted by a pharmacist or maybe by the system. And you can incorporate a search criteria if you want to look in particular on the patient, for their birth date or family name, whatnot. This is what the prescription history report would look like for a patient. This system by Optimum Technologies is pretty much in place in about 13 states, so if you are from Ohio or from another state, this might look very familiar. It just has Connecticut on it. Many of the patient reports have some of the same information or organized in the same fashion, including payment method, obviously the patient's name and address, the products that they were dispensed, the quantity, how the prescriber and the DEA numbers, and then the pharmacy name and address. No necessary interpretation of the data, however, just a pure report. So for our study, what we did was we undertook an anonymous survey that was emailed to Connecticut and Rhode Island pharmacists, licensed pharmacists. And the sample included people who were pharmacists who were registered with the prescription monitoring program, about 210 people, and Department of Consumer Protection pharmacists from their listserv for Connecticut. And then from Rhode Island, this came from the Department of Health, where they have a licensed pharmacist list. And not everybody had their emails listed on there, but it was we did work from that list. The items for the survey were collected from the literature and from the prescription monitoring program staff's input to incorporate things like how were typical substance abuse and mental health practices, screening practices, for instance. What do people typically counsel patients on? Do they talk with them about storage disposal? How do they use the PMP? What kind of barriers might exist in their pharmacy practice to accessing the PMP? And then we piloted those items with a small sample of pharmacists to refine our wording and order and length. We then put that to pharmacists over a six-month period from March to August of 2011 with some reminder emails to get people to respond. And the analyses were primarily descriptive, but also some multivariate analyses looking to look at those comparisons. And we also evaluated non-response bias to look at if early or late responders to these surveys differed. What we saw was about the challenge of doing electronic-based surveys like this, about 20% of folks had no or defunct or out-of-date email addresses, were not registered with the state, or opted out of SurveyMonkey surveys. A good portion of them were students, or no longer practiced and retired. So that left us with about a 10% sample, 10% response rate, but higher response rate from the PMP-using pharmacists at about 60%. This is about average for a health professional responding sample. You usually get around 10% if you're lucky on an electronic survey. We did not offer compensation whatsoever to the health professionals other than encourage them to take part in the CDC-funded study to really look at and understand the PMPUs. The analysis, though, showed that we had no non-response bias detected in terms of early or late responders, so we're at least confident in the data we did come back. The sample was primarily pharmacists age 45 or older, about half male and female representation there. Most have been practicing pharmacy for 10 or more years. The dispensing of opioids in the practice was commonplace, typically several times a day. There, more of the Connecticut pharmacists reported currently screening for illicit drug abuse, and about two-thirds in the sample had attended a continuing education on safer dispensing of prescription opioids in the past 5 years. Those that hadn't were very interested in doing so. The PMP use was really striking, however, between the two states. Every use of the PMP was significantly higher in Connecticut, where that online queryable system was in place. And in terms of how often they would access the system, it was within the past year, it was typically on far more frequently than a weekly basis. And those who did not use the PMP, we asked about their interest in using an online queryable PMP if they didn't know about it. And indeed had a very high endorsement of those, of the use of a potential online queryable PMP. But when asked why they maybe didn't use their PMP, a number of the pharmacists indicated that they certainly barriers of lack of awareness. Some of the infrastructure in terms of no or limited internet access were there. They were frustrated by reporting delays. Clearly that was the biggest factor in Rhode Island. We did have a number of people indicate that their employer does not require it, and sometimes that their employer does not permit it. This is definitely the case with a couple of the retail chains that put their foot down, a couple big names that absolutely did not permit any internet access by their pharmacists, not even for the PMP and the safety of their patients. that PMP users were more likely, however, to be male, and more had been using, had been practicing pharmacy for fewer periods of years. We asked them to indicate the zip code of their primary pharmacy practice, and you can see the density of the users in this map. So pretty well distributed spatially. Some of the changing the pharmacy practices. Screening for abuse of drugs, typically we asked folks, pharmacists, how they were screening, if they screened for drug abuse, how they would do that. While the vast majority indicated that they used professional judgment, in Connecticut, most strikingly, nearly the same proportion of people indicated that they also used the prescription monitoring program report. And very few asked directly or used a screening tool like the CAGE or the audit or something like this. The counseling of patients prescribed prescription opioids, we asked them what they typically would do and what they would counsel those patients on. There were no differences by state, so by practice, or whether they used the PMP or not, but typically those topics that they would counsel patients on included co-ingestion risks, addiction, unauthorized dose escalations, sharing medications, some with overdose symptoms, rarely on disposal and storage, and thankfully not too many people were indicating that they did absolutely no counseling. So we did have about 20% who still stuck around saying that they did not talk with patients about any of the risks of prescribed opioid medications. In terms of detecting doctor shopping, we had a similar proportion of Rhode Island and Connecticut pharmacists that used insurance rejection or professional judgment. Those were certainly the more popular, popularly endorsed methods for detecting doctor shopping. But in Connecticut, strikingly, 67% to 7%, so nearly 400% more in Connecticut with an online queryable system, did we see a verifiable method for detecting doctor shopping. In terms of how they saw or felt or thought about prescription monitoring programs, that we asked them, you know, how do you view that the PMP helps to reduce diversion to affect prescription opioid abuse in your state and in your practice? Those who were using the PMP certainly had a more positive view of what the PMP could do in general, and Connecticut pharmacists in particular had a more positive view of the PMP than Rhode Island pharmacists. So sort of regardless of which state, Connecticut more generally had a, even whether they used it or not, they endorsed the view of the PMP as something that was an effective diversion reduction tool. However, when we looked at, we asked pharmacists how they typically responded to a patient who they were suspecting was diverting or doctor shopping. This was the model that controlled for age and gender and male years of pharmacy practice. And on the left side, you can see the various things that potentially were responses from the pharmacists, and the adjusted odds ratios with the 95% confidence intervals indicating what a PMP user pharmacist compared to a non-PMP user pharmacist action might look like. While most of the responses were very much the same or not significantly different from one another, that discussing the concerns with the patient was actually something that was rarely or less likely to be endorsed by a PMP using pharmacist than not. So they were less likely to talk with their patient directly about their concerns about suspected doctor shopping and diversion if they used the PMP. They were also less likely to state that they were out of stock of the drug in their pharmacy. They were equally as likely to, or similarly as likely to, refuse to fill the prescription, to refer the patient back to the provider, contact the physician, counsel the patient on potential overdose risk, refer to substance abuse treatment, insist that the patient leave the pharmacy, or call the cops. So one big question trying to figure out what has happened here in these data. Why might pharmacists have indicated they were less likely to say that they were out of stock of the medication if they were PMP users? Well, I'd love to hear what you all think, but some of what we had been discussing further conversations with the PMPs in Connecticut and Rhode Island, is potentially the patient report provides evidence of suspicion and permits multiple means of following up with and engaging with the patient so that they can do other things like refer to substance abuse treatment or contact the prescriber or refuse to fill, rather than deliberately misrepresenting the information to the patient that they are out of stock, sorry, go somewhere else. That's sort of what we, one of the reasons we thought perhaps there was they were less likely to state they're out of stock. But in terms of avoiding talking with the patient directly about the prescription monitoring report's contents, this too, we felt perhaps their training or their preparation, perhaps their comfort level in dealing with some of the consequences, some of the environmental constraints of not having a private counseling space, not having staff, nursing staff, counseling staff to deal with a patient who might be otherwise violent or might be needing very much an intervention. Perceptions of the pharmacist's role and responsibility might be very different, and certainly time is always a factor. We kept hearing this was a critical piece of the pharmacist not being able to do more in that setting. However, I think this is a critical opportunity to improve the interactions between pharmacists, patients that are suspected of doctor shopping, who might be at incredibly high risk of overdose, the PMPs and other prescription opioid abuse factors, and thinking about training, educating, continuing education or interprofessional cooperation opportunities, even something like building private counseling areas, some minute clinics, and opportunities for pharmacists to have a little bit more interaction with a patient than might happen in a semi-public or a public environment. And there are plenty of opportunities from tobacco cessation counseling opportunities. For instance, that literature is full of ask, advise, refer approaches to health problems and an opportunity for pharmacists to really make a fabulous public health connection for a patient. So the PMP might be able to be used as a tool for screening and brief intervention and then an intervention in the pharmacy and maybe even a referral to treatment thereafter. The limitations from this study include, of course, the sample size, representativeness and generalizability, and some of the small cell sizes, especially for Connecticut, for the non-PMP using pharmacists. The PMP differences are clear. I mean, Connecticut and Rhode Island are only two states, and other states that compel use or versus a voluntary system of checks, they incorporate unsolicited reports. And then we did not ask about retail or community pharmacies, and that was really important in some of our small town and suburban areas where there might actually only be one pharmacy, and it'd be really clear who the pharmacist was, who was responding. So that was to protect the anonymity of the respondent. And of course, this is a cross-sectional study with temporality and causality concerns. But generally, some of our conclusions is that pharmacists tend to use the PMPs to screen for diversion, doctor shopping, and abuse, that PMPs really had a limited impact on other aspects of pharmacy practice, that an electronic system was used more than a paper-based system, that use was associated with greater awareness of prescription opioid abuse and diversion and the perceived utility of PMPs in reducing these problems. But based on their current engagement, their current construction, it's not totally clear how pharmacists' use of a PMP may actually influence a patient's subsequent risk behavior. But other future research opportunities, including PMP-based interventions, interprofessional cooperation efforts, provider-pharmacist interventions, even pharmacist education that could be targeted particularly at PMP use and addiction counseling in an expert sort of environment, even physical manipulation to create pharmacist counseling areas in coupling with those interventions might be of interest. And then something we're exploring in Rhode Island is a pilot study incorporating a collaborative pharmacy practice agreement for naloxone to directly provide an opportunity for maybe PMP use or a suspicion for drug abuse and that's opioid involved to potentially indicate an offering of naloxone hydrochloride as a prescription for folks to prevent fatal overdose. Just to end, some of our the federal government, whether it's the CDC or the Office of National Drug Control Policy or the FDA, have embraced PMPs as one of the suggested primary prevention messages. I think pharmacists have a role to play in this environment, certainly in the PMPs, and I think potentially also in naloxone as well. So, thank you, and these findings are actually in press at the Journal of the American Pharmacy Association. Thank you.